You're tuned in to the R1 News, your stop for news and current affairs on the airwaves. 11 to 12 weekdays here on Radio 1 91 FM, Te Reo Irirangi Kotahi.
Tēnā koutou I tēnei ata. Kei te whakarunga mai koe ki Te Reo Irirangi Kotahi. Ko Zach Toku Ingoa.
Ko Amiria Taku Ingoa.
And you're listening to the Radio 1 Te Reo Irirangi Kotahi news show for Rāmere, Te Toru o Pipiri.
Coming up on today's busy program, we have an interview with University of Otago epidemiologist Michael Baker to discuss prison vaccination rates. After that, we've got a feature which looks into the Rotorua Council controversial representation agreement bill and the bigger picture of Māori and local government. Then we'll be speaking with economist Murat Ungur for our weekly segment Business as Usual about new Protected Disclosure Act agreement and the economic impacts of employment agreements. Finally, we'll be finishing off with a kōrero with Otago Farmers Market Manager Michelle Driscoll for our weekly segment Off to Market.
In Nayane, we've got Dave Borry with headlines and weather. But before we get to the news, we gotta play some tunes. Here's El Hotel with Old Friend Called Potential. Kia ora koutou and welcome back to the Rāmere News Show here on Radio 1 Te Reo Irirangi Kotahi. That was El Hotel with Old Friend Called Potential, and right now we have David Borry with the news and weather.
Tēnā koutou, ko Dave, tēnei. Construction work has begun on the new Dunedin Hospital. At an opening ceremony this morning, Health Minister Andrew Little said the new hospital is one of the biggest infrastructure projects ever undertaken in New Zealand. The new hospital will have 421 beds, 16 theatres and 30 high dependency beds. The first completed section of the hospital is set to open in 2025, with all construction expected to be done in 2028. The Births, Deaths, Marriages and Relationships Registration Bill has passed its second reading, bringing the legislation one step closer to becoming law. The bill would see New Zealanders able to change their gender markers on official documents to correspond with their gender identity. Currently doing this requires going through a lengthy and expensive family court process. Australian Prime Minister Anthony Albanese has emphasised his party's Republican position during a speech marking the Queen's Jubilee. Speaking at Regatta Point in Canberra, Albanese said the relationship between Australia and the monarchy had moved from one of parent and upstart to one of equals. He paid tribute to Queen Elizabeth's 7 decades on the throne and also committed to advancing reconciliation with Indigenous Australians. And that was the headlines on R1 News. Now, the weather.
The R1 News weather.
E tēnei rā, Ōtepōti can look forward to a high of te kaumātahi, 11, and showers easing throughout the day, with southwesterlies easing in the evening. A Pōpō, expect a high of te kaumātoru, 13, with sunny skies all day.
Kia ora, David, for those excellent news and weather headlines.
That was the R1 News headlines. Catch up at r1.co.nz/news or find us at Radio 1 91 FM on Twitter or R1 News NZ on Instagram and tune in to R1 News at 11 a.m. on weekdays.
Up next on the R1 News Ramere show, we have an interview with University of Otago epidemiologist Michael Baker about the vaccination rates of Aotearoan prisoners. Up next, though, we have Georgia Lyons with Leave Behind.
I should have called you on your birthday. Could have picked up the phone. No, I keep trying to justify while I was sitting at home alone. Now we're driving on the road, hoping to find you, hoping to find you. But your breath is gone. I wish I'd seen you on the Friday. Could have said what was on my mind. Instead, I'm talking with an echo. But I keep waiting up, waiting all night. Waiting up, waiting all night. Waiting up, waiting all night. Waiting up. I'm packing you up tomorrow. Throwing it all away. Are we selling it all for nothing? Don't wanna leave behind, leave behind. Pack you up in the morning. I'll be throwing it all away. Just selling it all for nothing. Don't wanna leave behind, leave behind. Try to fit into your old clothes, to find the notes you used to hold. A pocket full of memories, why can't you be here to read them to me? This house isn't big enough, trying to keep the things that you own. For how long?
It is 11:10 a.m. on R1 News. That was Georgia Lines with Leave Behind. And now we are joined by Michael Baker, Professor in the Department of Public Health at the University of Otago, Wellington, to talk about prisoner vaccination rates. As of the end of May, 78.5% of prisoners had received their first vaccine, 73.1% double vaccinated, and 48.3% boosted. This means 21% of prisoners have not received a single dose of the COVID-19 vaccine. Today, we're going to be talking about why this is and what it means for Aotearoa's COVID response. Kia ora, Michael.
Kia ora, Amelia.
Could you tell us a little bit about the process of vaccinating the prison population and how it's been working so far?
Well, I think you summarised that very well with those numbers. We know that the vaccination program for inmates is the same as the public. You need basically now 3 doses of vaccine to protect you from the Omicron variant, which is very infectious. And so anyone who's missing those 3 doses is going to be far more vulnerable, not just to infection, but to really poor outcomes. And the only reason that we found this variant, current wave, bearable in New Zealand is because we've got relatively high vaccine coverage. And it's really pushed down the mortality rate to something that is still bad in New Zealand. I mean, this variant's killed more than 1,000 people this year, and it's going to keep on doing that. But it would be 10 times higher if we weren't highly vaccinated. Mm-hmm. And so I guess there's a huge equity issue here that those people who are in prison are missing out on vaccine to a much higher level than the wider public in New Zealand. And I think that's a real gap.
And so the vaccine rollout in prisons and correctional facilities, has it been insufficient, or are there a lot of people choosing not to be vaccinated?
Well, anecdotally, this is just how it's reported, there is more vaccine hesitancy in the inmate population. And it's not surprising because, of course, many people in prisons will have a very high level of distrust of authorities, mm-hmm. And for all sorts of complex reasons. So it means that really this is a challenge. We've just got to work that much harder to find people who can communicate and effectively with those who are incarcerated to really explain the benefits of vaccination. I mean, in the end, no one in New Zealand has been forced to be vaccinated. There are mandates for some occupational groups, but in the end, it is still free choice as to whether you're going to allow yourself to have a vaccine. And I think none of us would want that to be any different.
Mm-hmm. And is it quite problematic that only 78.5% of prisoners are double vaccinated? Like, what are some of the potential ramifications of this for more vulnerable communities that are overrepresented in that population?
Well, the 20% who've got no vaccination at all are particularly vulnerable, but even those who've had just one dose and those that have missed out on their booster, which is a large portion, are more vulnerable. And we have to remember that this is still a virus that, if you're unvaccinated, mm-hmm. has a mortality risk of approaching 1%. Now, there is one thing that does protect prison inmates to some extent, and that's the fact that they're a relatively youthful population. So that means that the consequences of getting infected will be less if you're if you're under 50 years of age, for instance, and that's the vast majority of inmates. So that is a plus. On the downside, that many in prisons will have what we call comorbidities, underlying health problems, and may have missed out on health care in the past for various reasons. So it's a mixed situation. But the other problem in prisons, of course, is that that's an environment where you can get a very rapid outbreak spread. Because people spend up to 23 hours a day in their cells, and many of them are sharing a cell with another person. So there are many examples internationally and also in New Zealand now of very rapid spread of COVID-19 virus in these situations.
Right. On that note of how differently it spreads within prisons. A lot of people view prisoners as separate from the rest of the population, but what risks do these relatively lower vaccination rates in comparison to Aotearoa's general eligible population present for our national-wide fight against COVID?
Well, as we know, controlling pandemics is really about dealing with inequalities and inequities, because we're all in it together, and unless we can get uniformly high coverage of vaccination and all the other things that protect us, like mask use and so on, then that affects the individuals, whānau, and the wider society. We have to deal with inequities, and that if we don't, we're going to be living with much higher rates of infection than we would otherwise. So I think every population in New Zealand deserves access to good health care. Mm-hmm. And that doesn't mean uniform access. It means access is really works harder on people who are more vulnerable and I think more alienated by society. That's the challenge. And I think in prison, you've got a population which is obviously has a high concentration of people who have been let down by society, but have also probably, you know, inevitably contributed to their own plight in being there. But the net effect is that they are much more vulnerable, and so we have to work very hard with this population to support their health needs. And we all benefit from doing that.
Mm-hmm. What are some things that should be done to protect those in prisons during the pandemic and also future societal health risks like what we've experienced for the past 2 years with the COVID-19 outbreak?
Well, I think one thing is to regard it as a health promotion opportunity when people are incarcerated, because that is a time when they can be reached by health messages. And again, those messages have to be conveyed by people they trust. I think often that would mean bringing people from outside the prison environment to work with them on addressing not just vaccination, but a range of health needs that, that many of them have. I mean, quite a high proportion of people are in prison and they have alcohol and substance use problems, which have often got them there. And this is a chance to readdress those issues, mental health concerns, catching up on all their vaccinations, and I think just perhaps supporting them to recognise that their health really matters, and it does affect their whānau members when they get out of prison, so it is important. And one thing that's been remarkable in New Zealand is that prisons became smoke-free environments quite recently, just in the last few years, and so as a result, that's also a situation where people can come out of their nicotine addiction, which is very difficult to do for many people. So if we thought of that as, I guess, one of the benefits of obviously incarcerating people is a last resort, but it does have a potential upside in that it is a chance to address the whole health, the health of the complete individual while they're in that environment.
Great. Thank you so much for coming on today.
Yeah, you've asked. This is a great set of questions you've asked, and I think it's really important that we do look at these wider issues around how we use the prison system and try and get greater benefit from it. So thank you.
Thank you.
That was University of Otago epidemiologist Michael Baker speaking on the importance of vaccinating prisoners and prisoner vaccination rates. Up next, we have a feature which delves into the Rotorua Council's paused representation arrangements bill and Māori and local government. Before that, we have Queens of the Stone Age with 666. It's currently 11:20 here on the Ramere R1 News Show. Take care.
Don't see a problem. The side, sound like a hoop, don't sound.
That was 666 by Queens of the Stone Age, before which we heard from Michael Baker from the Department of Public Health at University of Otago, Wellington, talking about vaccination rates among prisoners and what we can do to protect ourselves from COVID-19. Up next, we have a feature from Zach about the Rotorua Council's paused representation agreement bill and Māori in local government.
You may have heard about the ambitious Rotorua District Council Representation Arrangements Bill and the controversy that it's attracted. It's a bill which seeks to effectively level the playing field between Māori and non-Māori constituents in Rotorua by reshaping the council's composition. Under the Representation Arrangements Bill, the Rotorua Council would be composed of 3 Māori ward seats, 3 general ward seats, 4 seats for the whole district to vote on, and the mayoralty. This legislation seeks to bypass the Local Electoral Act of 2001, as that act stipulates that Māori and general seats must be calculated by population demographics. So why all the controversy then? Well, shortly after the Rotorua Council's bill passed its first reading in late Paengafafa April, it was criticised by Attorney General David Parker for breaching the Bill of Rights and for being discriminatory to those on the general roll. Parker reckoned that the bill would disproportionately elevate the power of Māori voters, and thus the bill cannot be justified. The bill also copped flak from the National Party, with National's Justice spokesperson Paul Goldsmith labelling the Representation Arrangements Bill a constitutional outrage. Although the Attorney General's ruling is non-binding, it does have political weight which was demonstrated when the Labour Party halted their support for the bill. Consequently, the Rotorua Council paused the bill when it was under review by the Māori Affairs Select Committee, in order to seek advice and fine-tune the legislation. Rotorua Mayor Steve Chadwick said the bill was always intended to champion fair representation for Māori in local government.
You have gone on the Māori roll for the general election, and if you then come want to vote in our bill, you get 3 votes, whereas those on the general ward get 6, and we say that's just not fair. So that's why we came up with a bill that is fair. It reflects the Treaty of Waitangi and the Fenton Agreement on which our township was built.
It's been over a month since the Rotorua Council have made any announcements about the bill, so it's high time for some reflection on the controversy which often surrounds co-governance and the importance of Māori representation in local government. Titiriti specialist and University of Otago politics professor Janine Haywood says Māori wards and Māori electorates attract so much backlash due to the lack of education on how these co-governance models work, and from the lack of public knowledge comes the claims of separatism and Māori privilege.
They're not well understood. We have an awful lot of reactionary responses to the ideas about the Māori electorates and the Māori wards, which are based on some pretty fundamental misunderstandings about how they work. So when people are objecting to both the Māori electorates and the Māori wards, it's normally because they believe that those are offering Māori some kind of privilege, is the language that's often used, or that they somehow run up against some really fundamental democratic principles that people hold quite dear. So sometimes people think that it means that Māori are getting an extra vote, but that's really not true in either case, in the case of Māori electorates or Māori wards.
Despite some politicians, like Christopher Luxon, characterising co-governance initiatives as separatist and divisive, Haywood says that they serve to ensure that Māori have a meaningful voice in a political system which has denied them one thus far.
There's nothing inherently wrong with allowing groups of people to self-identify and be, you know, be visible. So separating in that sense, there's nothing wrong with that. It depends on what you do with that. So in the case of Māori electorates and Māori wards, what that idea of being able to identify groups helps us to do, rather than disenfranchise people, is to do the total opposite and ensure that you can have good diversity and have particular groups represented at decision-making, you know, forums and in local councils or in parliament in ways that they otherwise clearly are struggling to do because of the way that democracy works and some of the obstacles that they encounter.
Haywood believes that there's no one-size-fits-all Māori representation arrangement for every council in Aotearoa. The Dunedin City Council, for instance, hasn't got a Māori ward. Instead, the DCC chose to elect 2 Runaka representatives on 2 key planning committees after a korero with mana whenua on what Māori representation should look like in Otipoti. Although meaningful and effective Māori representation might vary from council to council, Haywood says that councils across the country need to address Māori underrepresentation so that local government can truly deliver on its treaty obligations.
I don't think any number of other initiatives can detract from the fact that we have an issue about Māori being underrepresented in local government at the council table where decisions are actually made. So you can have as many other people as you want on other councils through other advisory consultation boards, whatever the other arrangements are. But I still think at some point we need to reflect on the actual council representation arrangements and the kinds of councils that those deliver and what we think that ought to reflect about the treaty partnership in Aotearoa New Zealand.
Kia ora, Zach, for that piece on the Rotorua District Council Representation Agreements Bill and Māori in local government. It is 11:29 a.m. here on R1 News, and up next on the program, we'll be speaking with Murat Ungor from the Department of Economics at Otago University. For our segment, Business as Usual, this week we're looking at employment agreements. But first, here's a song. This is Curtis Mayfield with Move One Up.
Just move on up toward your destination. Though you may find from time to time complication. We'll be right back.
That was Curtis Mayfield with Move On Up. And now we are joined by Mira Ungo from the Department of Economics here at Otago University for this week's installment of Business as Usual on R1 News. Today we'll be discussing employment agreements and their economic impacts. Kia ora, Mira, are you there?
Kia ora, Amelia. How are you today?
Good, thanks. How are you?
Not bad. Thank you very much.
So there's a new Protected Disclosure Act which will come into force next month, replacing current whistleblowing laws, aiming to strengthen safeguards for employees that speak out against their employer's wrongdoing. Could you tell us a little bit more about this legislation?
Yes. So basically, it's an important legislation because this one facilitates the disclosure and investigation of serious wrongdoing in the workplace. And also it provides protection for employees who report concerns. So it's a little bit a general idea, and there are several key phrases that we need to understand. First of all, we are talking about investigation of serious wrongdoing in the workplace. And the natural question is, so what is the serious wrongdoing? And the serious wrongdoing includes unlawful, corrupt or irregular use of public money or resources, and any conduct that poses a serious risk to public health, safety, the environment, and also any criminal offense or management by public officials. So basically, if you think about this aspect and the definition of the serious wrongdoing, then I think we all agree that it is important as individuals to live and to work in a free, transparent, open society. Mm-hmm. And in a free, open society, people feel they can raise any serious issues within their organizations in confidence. And they will feel that they won't be punished for bringing them to light. And New Zealand has a good reputation, good international reputation. So basically, it is one of New Zealand's strengths in both public and business organizations. I can give you one data issue from the Transparency International. So this is regarding the corruption. Mm-hmm. Transparency International is a global movement working over like more than 100 countries. And so what is corruption? Corruption is the abuse of entrusted power for private gain. So each year, Transparency International releases their Corruption Perception Index. And this index ranks, I believe, more than 180 countries around the world by their perceived levels of public sector corruption. So basically, this index measures how corrupt each country's public sector is perceived to be. So they conduct surveys to experts and business people, and they gather information. Mm-hmm. And each year, Scandinavian countries, Nordic countries, and New Zealand, they are the top-performing countries. In other words, we have robust corruption-fighting laws, and it's an important feature of New Zealand. So New Zealand was one of the first countries in the world to introduce such a legislation that protects people who report concerns of serious wrongdoing in the workplace. And with the new act, as you say, which will come into force next month, there are some changes. And these are good changes that will increase transparency in each organization.
Mm-hmm. Do employment regulations like these acts also work in the interest of businesses?
We have to say whether this is public organization or the private organization. Mm-hmm. But with the new legislation, one of the changes is that because with this legislation, they extend the definition of serious wrongdoing to cover private sector use of public funds. I think this is a new change. So basically, if you're a private sector, and if perhaps you have some kind of private public partnership, and if you are using the public funds, then you have to use them in a proper way. So this is the first immediate impact on businesses. But otherwise, in terms of employment opportunities, etc., it's not going to create significant change because serious wrongdoing is a little bit different than the typical employment issues that we face every single day. So this act does not cover employment issues that are more properly covered by the Employment Relations Act. And also perhaps as an employee, you might be dissatisfied with the leadership of your organization, or maybe there are some minor misconduct matters, but they will not count as the serious wrongdoing. So it's not going to create employment, unemployment, labor market issues, but it is going to strengthen the organization's internal structure, especially in the public sector.
Right. So are there things that businesses should be worried about, or is this employment agreement actually quite good overall for everyone involved? So
this is not something that businesses should worry about. Basically, it is important that there is no serious wrongdoing in our businesses.
Yeah.
So basically, as long as people are extremely careful about the issues like corruption, bribery, or safety, public health concerns, so there is not it's not a problem. But the thing that we should emphasize here is that it is very good that New Zealand has such legislations. Mm-hmm. Because these problems, corruption, bribery, or not taking care of environment when practicing businesses, is very common in many developing countries. If you go to countries such as in Latin America or Middle East or in Sub-Saharan Africa, you may encounter such problems. And that's in those countries, it might be very difficult for the employees to come up with a solution and to become a whistleblower. But in transparent societies like New Zealand, we already have very low levels of corruption, bribery, and with this new legislation, we are actually protecting our international standards.
Mm-hmm. Are there other ways that we support employees in these situations, or the things that other countries do differently?
So I do not know every international standard, but there is one change that, because I went over the changes, because the last one was in 2000, so basically it's after 2020, after 22 years, and one of the key changes that I observe is that this new legislation will allow people to report serious wrongdoing directly to an appropriate authority.
Mm-hmm.
So basically, you don't have to go to your internal structure, because maybe there can be trust issues. If you do not trust the people within your organizations, then this legislation tells us that you can immediately go to an appropriate authority. So it can be ombudsman, or it can be some kind of auditor or parliamentary commissioner, or the head of any public sector organization, etc. So these are the appropriate authorities. So basically, you can go to a trusted external party. You can talk about the problem or serious wrongdoing that you observe, and within 20 days, receiving your disclosure, within 20 days, they have to go back to you. They have to report back to the disclosure regarding to whether this is actually counts as serious wrongdoing, or how they are going to handle this. So the presence of external party, trusted external parties, very important. So that's why people, employee, they can directly talk to these appropriate authorities at any time, whenever they observe or whenever they feel that there's something seriously wrong here. I think this is one of the key changes in this legislation.
Cool. Thank you so much for coming on today, Murat.
Thank you, Amiria. Have a good weekend.
That was Murat Ungur joining us from the University of Otago Economics Department to speak on the new Protected Disclosures Act and employment agreements. Absolutely fantastic stuff there. Up next on the program, or lastly on the program, I should say, we have Off to Market, where we will be joined by Michelle Driscoll to discuss what's new at the Otago Farmers Market. It's currently 11:46 on the R1 News Ramere Show. Up next on the program, we have Koizilla with I Hate My Job. Stay tuned.
Oh,
This is the R1 News on Radio 1 91 FM. Te Reo Irirangi Kotahi.
Mister, got yourself in trouble. Kissed her, now you see a double. Twist her, it's all gonna become. Okay. I follow my nose, I don't know where it goes, but if you wanna flow, we could fly.
Kia ora, welcome back to the Ramere R1 News Show here on Radio 1. It is currently 11:53 and we are joined by Farmers Market Manager Michelle Driscoll in our weekly segment, Off to Market. Never mind, might have to rearrange.
Just a little bit of technical difficulties.
A little bit of technical difficulties.
Say. Sorry about that.
You know, it happens to the best of us.
But we will be back with Off to Market in a minute.
Very, very shortly. Be right back.
I'm always thinking twice. I'm running to the light.
That was Mild Hive by Nick and Ruben. Now we are joined by Michelle Driscoll from the Otago Farmers Market for our weekly segment, Off to Market. How's it going, Michelle?
Oh, good, thank you. Hi. Well,
finally back on the airwaves.
Winter gremlins.
Winter gremlins. Yes, you're not wrong. You're not wrong. What's been going on at the market lately?
We had a great weekend last weekend. It was really busy and buzzy, and lots of new faces. It was like a long weekend last weekend. So I'm hoping that this weekend will be the same. Yeah, it was nice.
Fantastic.
Lots of music, and it was good. Good atmosphere.
Speaking of the long weekend, are there any exciting things coming up this weekend?
We've got all the usual suspects there, and there'll be a bit of music as well. We've got Maplewood Trio playing and Mike Smith, but just lots of goodies, lots of vegetables, and lots of there's a few interesting. There's mulled gin, which Dunedin Craft Distillery have got, that is trialling that this weekend. So that sounds interesting for winter. Marie is back. She does all the fermented foods, and she makes her own tempeh. She's got green splits, lentil, quinoa, and sesame seed tempeh this weekend. And her kimchi is always really good. It's I kind of put that on my poached eggs each morning. She's got either medium or hot, and it's always local veggies, and it's a real probiotic, and it's really good for gut health. So she's back, so that'll be good. There's Coastal Caps and Brightside. Brightside Sprouts normally, but he's gourmet. He's actually on, they're both up on the platform. They're both there this week with the native Phoenix oyster mushrooms, so there'll be some mushrooms available.
Nice.
Yeah, I saw that they were like grow your own mushroom kits last week.
Yeah, he does that, yeah. So that's Ben at Brightside. He sells those once a month, but he can do orders for them. But they're quite cool. I think they're like $45, $50, and you can then grow your own. I think that's quite a good little hobby, really. But you've just got to have the right temperature in your house and all of that. They can be a little bit temperamental, I think. But if you can manage to grow them, then I think that's pretty amazing. And they're full of goodness, those mushrooms. And I think it feels like a good potato weekend. I think just been a long weekend, and you know, roasts. There's just such a variety of potatoes at the moment.
Sounds absolutely gangster. Now, a friend of mine was wondering if Marie's Fine Foods is still at the market. Is that still...
Marie's, did you say?
Yeah.
Yeah, so that's who I was talking about with the tempeh.
Oh, legit.
So she's up on the platform, so she's back. She's just been travelling around for the last couple of months around the country. So, yeah, she's got all her little... gluten-free vegan pancakes, and then she's got the tempeh and the kimchi, and she's got low-sugar jams as well, which are really nice. Okay. Nice. So she's there. And also Tartan Sari just won the Outstanding New Zealand Food Producers Award for their really hot pickle, a zucchini pickle, which is really delicious. So she's up on the platform as well.
Oh my God.
Mm. What else? It's always delicious cheese, you know, like... Whitestone cheese always have cut big slabs of Lindus Pass or the Evansdale cheese. They've got good cumin or smoked Tanya cheese, which is always good with a hunk of bread.
Mm-hmm.
But we've got about 51 vendors expected this weekend, so it should be a good market. And I mean, there's things like red onions at the moment. I saw for $3 a kg at Caffinus Farms. I saw broccoli last week for $2 each. So there's some good veggies there at the moment. I also tried last week the breads and more, their sourdough pitta pockets. They do a packet of those. I think it's about 5 in a packet. They were really good, really soft and spongy and delicious.
Mm.
Amazing. It always blows my mind how many more things there are to discover at the market.
Mm.
There's always something. And next week I can let you know of someone who is starting... she's actually starting this weekend. But if you like chai, good traditional chai, then she's actually starting. I'll just let you know that. I'm not putting it in the newsletter. We're doing a soft launch, but I'll let you guys know. So that sounds really interesting too, up on the platform.
Sounds fantastic. All right, thank you so much for dropping by and talking
You're
with
welcome.
Us.
You're welcome. Have a good weekend.
You too, likewise. Take care.
All right. Thank you. Bye-bye.
Thank you very much.
That was Michelle Driscoll market manager at the Otago Farmers Market for our weekly segment, Off to Market. It's always a great chat.
Always a fantastic chat. Now, we've had a pretty busy show today. What have we kind of gone through, man?
Yeah, lots of interesting stuff. Earlier in the show, we spoke with Michael Baker from the Department of Public Health at Otago University Wellington about vaccination rates in prisons.
The Nooner, 12 to 2.
Oh, yeah, we sure did. before that, I mean, oh, sorry, actually, after that, we had a little feature about the, the Rotorua Representation Arrangements Bill, which was pretty fantastic, kind of tracing into all sorts of interesting facets of Māori and local government, you know?
Yeah, and after that, we spoke with Murat Ungo from the Department of Economics about employment agreements and the new legislation regarding whistleblowers.
Pretty fascinating stuff.
All sorts happening in the world at the moment. And yeah, That's been our show for R1 News.
Yeah, thank you so much for listening. It's currently 12:01. Up next, we have Lips with Traces of Teddy. Take care.
You've been tuned in to the R1 News, weekdays from 11 to 12 here on Radio 1 91 FM, Te Reo Irirangi Kotahi. Catch up at r1.co.nz/news or find us at Radio 1 91 FM on Twitter or R1 News NZ on Instagram.
That was a Radio 1 91 FM podcast! You can find more of them at r1.co.nz/podcast.